Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you for your support, first up.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for being part of an exclusive and quite glamorous club, isn't it?
It keeps us in pomades.
That's right.
Henry's not using that much pomade, it's fair to say.
Well, I'm trying to gradually sort of wean myself off pomade and wean myself on to, what I call pomade alternatives.
Like sandwich paste.
It's yeah, essentially, sandwich paste or the more I offer a range, but your entry level one is sandwich paste, but then it goes up to crab paste.
Right.
At your top range.
Sure.
And that's just being slathered on to the top of the head?
Yeah, so you get an application mallet. And the idea is, in a hurry,
and they get better and better over the years, don't they? Because they eventually they find the contours of
they crenellate. They gradually
you crenellate with it.
Well, you crenellate with it. It's very much you very much end up meeting a happy medium in the end. You can't expect the mallet to fully crenellate to suit you, so you're going to have to you know.
People often say that the mallet finds the crenellations within the skull.
That were already there.
Yeah.
Exactly, but that you weren't necessarily aware of. Exactly. Yeah. But eventually, it gets to a point where you can actually store the mallet directly on your face because it'll hook on.
Using the sandwich paste as a sort of a mild adhesive, if necessary, in a high wind.
Yeah, a mild and tasty adhesive.
Yes.
And what benefits is the crab paste bringing to the wearer?
Well, basically what it does is it attracts so many wasps
that it keeps the bees away.
Yeah, so you know, you're pretty much guaranteed a bee-free experience if you're outdoors in the summer at a picnic, for example. But that'll be down to the sheer volume of wasps.
But also, you are drawing quite a lot of wasp fire away from a picnic, for example, so people can eat jam sandwiches and things, you know, with impunity, as you take on the wasp.
Well, that's the thing. And if you can coordinate with friends or with a group of friends, you could have a series of picnics where all the wasps are being distracted by.
They don't invite you to the picnic. They invite you to the other side of the river from the picnic, don't they?
That's right. Yeah. And then you can use binoculars to look at the picnic. But don't try and have your own picnic while doing that. I think that breaks the chain.
No, and don't set your expectations too high with the binoculars, because most of the view will be obscured by wasps.
By wasps. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm feeling a little bit giddy, because I'm just recovering from about a food poisoning. So I'm the day after right now. Where weirdly, I find that I bounce back incredibly hard and incredibly strong.
You're in the euphoria zone.
I'm in the absolute euphoria zone.
He's not ready for the world yet. You're pulling the drip out of the arm.
Yeah.
You're going to crack the case and seek vengeance and avenge your slain partner.
I am absolutely not ready for that. I need to be kept within a secure hospital for at least another week, I'd say, or even a fortnight. Yeah, because, yeah, but as you say, I'm running down the corridor in my backless gown.
Leaving a readily traceable trail.
Of a whole variety of fluids. I don't care who knows it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, what happened to you tells us that it's summer. It's the first food poisoning at a barbecue of the
summer.
Oh, like the first crocus of spring. Yes.
Exactly. Very similar moment. It was literally my first barbecue of the summer, and it was the one at which I declared summer, which is something that I do. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us do that. We like to feel that we get to declare it.
With the crab paste mallet? Did that involve?
Well, with the crab paste mallet, exactly. So I am the crab paste mallet. I declared it and then brought the crab paste mallet. I mean, the crab.
You're saying crab-based mallet?
That's a whole different mallet. That one is still very much...
That's R&D phase, isn't it?
That's really...
It's hopefully going to be ready for winter.
A big shout out to the team at Nottingham University. Really, really, really thankless work. It's really thankless work.
Is the only university safely enough inland to believe to be appropriate for the R&D phase?
Exactly.
Because they just use prototype crabs, don't they?
Well, if the crabs that they're breeding got out into the ecosystem, it would be the end of crab kind. So that's what it needs to be. Yeah.
So it needs to probably will need to be deployed at some point, but getting the timing is going to be crucial, isn't it? So, yes, I brought the crab paste mallet down on my own head and declared summer. It's possible that's what gave me the food poisoning, because that mallet has been hanging around for ages.
Yeah.
But no, I declared summer. It was my first. I was wearing a short sleeve shirt for the first time this year.
Even though it's April, it was April at the time, right? A lot of people around the nation were doing that.
You know what? That's just brought home how ridiculously that's just too soon. It just wasn't summer.
That's the nation in a nutshell.
It's April.
That's the nation's approach to any breath of warm weather.
I'm literally declaring summer in April. That's an absolute bollock, isn't it?
So do you think that your body expelling the barbecued food was just saying, was trying to tell us, come on, guys, it's not time for a barbecue. It's still the spring.
I think it probably was. I think my body, because the body is tied into the diurnal rhythms, isn't it, of the moon.
Exactly.
The rotation of the stars, the tides. You know, we're all... We're all sort of...
the breeding patterns of the salmon.
Exactly. Mm. We're sort of cued into that stuff, aren't we? It could be that I haven't actually worked out what I got the food poisoning from. And it might not even have been at the bar, because I think often it skips a meal. It's not the one you've just had.
We've had your skips a meal theory before. Yes, have we? That's good. Yeah, yeah. Which is, I think Ben was a particular fan of.
Well, I think the digestive tract in general is a couple of meals behind where you think it's at. So, there's nowhere nice to go with that, so I'm not going to explore it anymore.
No, sure, but I think the audience understands. Yeah, it's like sort of time zones, basically.
It's like time zones.
Yeah.
Which is why if you fly against the rotation of the Earth, it's possible to have a dump for a meal you haven't eaten yet.
Yeah. But I think, we had an email once from someone whose friend had gone to maybe I'll bleep out the name of the restaurant, had eaten a meal there.
Ben, can I say, if you tell a story about a friend or someone who went to a... we've got a pretty good idea who it might be. But anyway, carry on.
I'm sure we had an email from someone else saying their friend had gone to... had eaten there, had instantly shat themselves.
Oh, God. Yes.
They'd remonstrated with the staff.
Oh, yeah.
And the staff had said, hang on.
Yeah,
and then they'd expanded Henry's theory, which is that was in the post
Hang
already.
On. When diarrhea has a 24-hour delay.
You know it's our diarrhea because it'll contain a voucher.
A five-meat voucher.
For your next five-meat experience. That's 20% off for you and a friend.
And a free tilt at the salad buffet.
For 35 seconds.
Get scooping.
And you have to have your hands tied behind your back because it's very provocative. And a sausage in your mouth. Because the sausage is effectively free for us.
It's all in the small print, people.
Yeah, gone.
Whenever I've had food poisoning, I do sort of start. I turn detective quite quickly, and I start thinking about what is the...
That's the thing, is you're having to do detective work in the least good state of mind to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Which is heaving the vermilion acid all over the documents you're trying to analyse. Isn't it? You're filling up filing cabinets with it.
Dissolving all that red thread on the walls.
Exactly. All the red thread's gone.
It's gone.
And your interviewees have to wear a special visor.
Welding mask, yeah.
Welding mask. No, so yeah, go on, Ben.
Well, I was just... Do you have any prime suspects, I guess?
Well, okay, so I've been going through it in my mind, as you do. The one I'm thinking is... I did eat a whole seagull carcass on the way to the barbecue. It was one of those serendipitous
cooked
things.
Cooked or sashimi? What are we talking about?
It was just malleted, really.
Yeah.
Just malleted its legs off. Saved them for later. And ate the main bird. I tell you what it might have been was about... It was sometime within the last week, I've eaten an entire pot of prawn cocktail, from the supermarket.
Yeah, right.
That was one day past its best before date. But only one
I think it's
day.
Case closed, isn't it?
Is it? Because I've always thought the universe we lived in was, if stuff's in the fridge, that limit is basically bollocks and you've got at least a couple of days. Come on, guys, chill out.
No. So what it is, Henry, is it's best before dates are entirely bollocks. I agree.
Okay.
Unless the creature has lived in the deep.
So we need a mnemonic.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
We really need a mnemonic. Beyond its best before date, it will not keep if it hails from the deep.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So that's my rule. It's like I'm really loose with the sell by date. Mm. But if that thing has spent one iota of its life underwater, and that includes diving birds and beavers and other
submariners.
What's that?
Submariners.
Submariners, for example. Yeah, there's something about if it's been under the water, it's like you have to, you don't mess with that stuff. That's what I
buy that.
That's quite good.
Isn't it? Anything that's shellfish, if it's remotely off your...
Mm. Yeah.
But I think for some reason I felt, because it was smothered in all that Mary Rose sauce.
See, that makes it even more likely to get away with sort of toxin crimes, doesn't it? You know, what are you seeing? Do you know what I mean? It's not like a sort of yog, you can give it a sniff and has your ham turned green, you know?
Even within the name of that sauce is a clue to what was going to happen, which was that the Mary Rose came up again, didn't it?
Yes.
Oh, it did. You're right. It was a clue, of course. Of course. This is the moment.
It went down and then it came up again later. And that told you everything you needed to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we always recommend being very careful with Titanic oysters, don't we? with Titanic brand gumbo soup.
Well, no, that's fine, because that would go down and never come back again.
Oh yeah. Oh no, that's fine.
Yeah.
We only recommend Titanic soup.
Until they do finally manage to retrieve it from the seabed. Which revoke that recommendation.
At which point you'll have really, really long onset, long delay quits. My little test for it is, well, there's people say sniff test, don't they?
Yeah.
My little test is eat it, and if you shit yourself within 24 hours, it probably wasn't okay. So that was the test.
It's more
I
comprehensive
used.
Than the sniff
it's
test.
It's much more
it?
Comprehensive. It's bulletproof. So maybe it was that. Well, anyway, that's what happened to me. And it wasn't very nice, but now I'm feeling better.
Good.
And I could do more details on the next bit because I've got lots more to say about it.
Okay, let's do that.
Which comes out in what order? Oh, they'll get the other bit in the wrong order, though, won't they?
What do you mean?
Don't know.
Not quite better yet.
Well, actually, I'm having moments of feeling loads better and then really troughing.
Yeah, but you're not experiencing the linear passage of time.
Oh, God, no.
Normally, yet. So no. Let's let Ben and I handle that side of things for you.
I'm on spiral time. Have you not experienced that? It's so much better.
Anyway, we'll have some more details in a bit. But first, talking of terrible toilet experiences, some more stuff from our episode about festivals.
Very good.
Very nicely done.
Yeah.
Blimey, that was a long time ago. I didn't remember that episode at all. That could be because I'm on spiral time. The time you need, when you need it. How you need it. It's spiral time. I just want to say something. If I'm sounding a bit tense, it's because I've got a washing machine full of clothes.
Right.
Not a dishwasher. That's a mistake I made before. Again, I've got a washing machine full of wet clothes. It just beeped just before we started recording. It beeped, said, completed. So they're sat there. You know, there's just a little bit of tension. You know, when you know that there's a clump of wet sort of socks, pants, trousers, etc. that just sat there.
Okay. And they're going to get stinky.
At some point. But maybe I can pop off. I don't think we can transmit or in audio terms me hanging out my washing. That feels like that would be a step too far for us. Wouldn't it?
Would it?
Would it?
You've got to ask these questions, haven't you, creatively? I've been having a little problem recently with some panko breadcrumbs, and I'd like to tell you about it.
Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
A few weeks ago, I had a sudden food urge for a very specific food. I don't know if either of you ever have this. I had a sudden urge to eat a seafood gratin.
Right.
I don't know where that came from, but it was very, very powerful. And I do sometimes get these very powerful food urges. So I used to have it for tomatoes all the time. I used to have it's a condition called tomatophagia that I used to have, where I was craving tomatoes like round the clock. I was eating tomatoes like crisps. I was just constantly eating. I was roasting tomatoes. I was eating them neat. I was salading them. I was chopping them. I was not chopping them. And often it's to do with some sort of imbalance or some sort of nutritional lack or something that you're trying to make.
Or pregnancy. Yeah.
And I'm pleased to say I gave birth to a healthy beef tomato. it was heritage type. Slightly gnarly, but with a good, strong green hat that they have.
Who's currently in the middle of her Duke of Edinburgh gold expedition,
yes.
Isn't she?
She's
That's
right.
She's thriving.
Yeah. Yeah. Doing really, really well.
She's got a place at Warwick University.
She's got a place at Warwick.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, we couldn't be more proud, really.
So your fish food gratin.
So I had a urge to make a seafood gratin. So I Googled it, seafood gratin. Got myself a good recipe going. I had to buy panko breadcrumbs. Mm-hmm. Now, panko breadcrumbs, for one thing, it's one of those classic things where the hell is that in a supermarket? No one knows. Well, I know it's in there, but what section is that? There's not a panko aisle.
No.
What are breadcrumbs? It's not in bread. No. There isn't a crumb section. It's not a condiment. What the hell is it? No. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those.
You know, it's not going to be on the gluten-free shelf. That's the
it's
only
not going to be.
So you need to start there and work your way out.
Yeah, that's right. So you sort of mark it negatively, as it were. So you start with what it is, where it isn't.
Yeah.
It's not going to be in live poultry.
No.
It's not going to be in magazines.
Well, it's either that approach, which is logical, or you do the sort of surveying thing where you just take a sort of like a 1 meter square grid and just toss it randomly over the back of your head and then investigate that where it lands, see if there's any panko breadcrumbs. If they're not, record it.
Yeah.
Get the coordinates, try again, keep trying.
I mean, my approach to these things is I get a bit frustrated and I go, I'm just going to bounce around like a sort of random ball around this place, just going up to bits of shelving, looking at them and getting angry that there's no panko.
Okay, fine. So furious Brownian motion style.
Furious Brownian motion. Yeah. So I'm sort of rotating, I'm bouncing. But I try and maintain sort of, you know, sort of snooker logic in terms of my bounce angles.
Yeah.
So I'll go up to a bit of supermarket shelf, I'll look at it. Pickles. These aren't panko. How are you supposed to bloody find panko around here?
Ricochet off some plain white flour.
I'll ricochet off some flour. Into the prawn cocktail zone. Mm-hmm. This isn't panko. How are you supposed to bloody do this? Just bounce around getting more and more angry. But eventually I tracked down breadcrumbs, which weren't the right ones. I had that awful moment where the very, very kind lady helped me find the breadcrumbs, that they weren't the ones I wanted. But I didn't have the guts to tell her that. So I just said, thank you. These are the breadcrumbs I'm looking for. Even though they weren't.
What I don't really know what sets apart a panko breadcrumb from another breadcrumb. So I would have made the same mistake as the supermarket worker you encounters, Henry. I'm panko ignorant.
I'm also panko ignorant. But I had that thing which is, you know, like I was just like I was being bloody minded about it. It's like it says panko in the recipe.
Right. Is there a panko bread, or is it something has happened after the breadcrumb that makes it panko?
That's a great concept. Is there such a thing as a panko bread, panko loaf? The hardest bread, the hardest loaf of bread in that. In the world, the panko loaf.
I've just looked at panko.
Mm.
Mm.
Panko is made from bread baked by passing electrical current through the dough.
Wow.
Which yields bread without a crust.
Pure crumb.
It's a freak.
It's pure crumb. That's the equivalent of like when then there's going to be like huge, like 55-story cubes of pork being bred in factories.
Yeah,
that are just pure pork. It's pure crumb.
Was the intent? Was that for people who were slicing off their crusts? Were they trying to solve that problem? They're trying to make a crustless bread.
I think you. So from what I can tell, you never get a panko loaf. It's instantly then turned into crumbs.
There's no such thing as a panko
loaf.
They
won't release it into the wild.
But that is like automated meat we're going to have in the future, where there's no such thing as a cyber pork pig. There'll be cyber pork, which you buy, or get sent to you online, or whatever, or 3D print from the 3D meat printer that you've got next to your air fryer. and there'll be no pig. There won't be that sense that you're really biting into something that used to have a personality.
No, that pig will be living in your house, will be serving that pig.
Well, no, there won't be a pig, Mike. It'll just be a cube of pure pork meat.
Yeah, no, but the pig is now in leisure time, right?
Well, exactly. That's right. Yeah, so the pig's now your mate.
Yeah.
It's your mate Bunsey.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those huge cubes of pork that they're going to make, and they're not pigs as such. They don't have trotters, they don't have tails, they don't have ears. But, this is a bit disturbing, it's been discovered that they can dream. Yeah. So, got the panko, made the gratin.
Yeah.
Really, really nice. It totally hit my gratin spot. My gratin itch got scratched.
Yeah.
But I then had a problem. I've got a box almost full of panko breadcrumbs.
Okay.
Ah, I see.
What the sweet hell do I do with these things?
Just eat them by the fistful?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. So I had a few options. One is freeze the panko. You can't freeze panko, certainly according to my box. Because I think you'd be then reconstituting, I think what we've learned now is you'd be reconstituting breads into a loaf that never have been a loaf. Right. You're therefore crossing the loaf threshold.
Yeah. The wrong way.
The wrong way.
Never make a backwards loaf.
You create an anti-loaf. The knock-on effects of which could be catastrophic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Einstein speculated, didn't he?
It was a theoretical.
It was just a theoretical loaf. What an anti-loaf could do.
He never imagined there might be a future in which Henry Packer might actually
make an anti-loaf. And it's true that hovercrafts wouldn't work without the concept of an anti-loaf. So even though you don't make an anti-loaf, the fact that you know that the maths
must
around
exist. It must be. Yeah.
It must certainly mathematically exist in the realm.
There's the potential. Yeah.
And if you're interested in this, you can learn about this in the upcoming film Packenheimer.
That's right.
In which young Henry Packer
tries to create
messes with the very fabric of the panko universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's filmed all around. Obviously, there's the tribunal, congressional tribunal, but it's all set around the toilet breaks that punctuate that tribunal.
That's right. Which has been a lot of the real meat. That's when a lot of, you know, meetings, the real stuff actually happens often in those toilet meet bits of the conference. Well, the denouement, of course, is when I try and actually manage to create an anti-loaf briefly, which results in a pret-a-manger getting shrunk to the size of an almond. Along with everyone inside. It's quite...
But they don't know that.
But they don't know that, luckily. As far as we know, they're still stuck in that prep, just very, very small. So anyway, panko. So I made the gratin.
Yeah.
Well, I had two problems. My first one was I've got loads of gratin now. I've scratched my gratin itch. I'm not going to want to eat seafood gratin for another decade, I'd say.
Okay.
But so that is stuck in the freezer. But what I've got is this box of panko. So what did I don't want to throw. I don't like throwing away food. Yeah, no. It's just silly. This is me, I suppose. I mean, you guys don't care. But I do. I don't know why. That's just silly. I don't like wastage. Do you know what I mean? Because I know, Mike, I've seen you toss entire pizzas out the window of your car. How many are you driving around? You have one bite, don't fancy it, it'll frisbee the whole pizza out of the car window, won't you? Ben, I've seen you throw a printer out of the window of your car.
You took one bite?
At a man eating a pizza.
At a man eating a pizza. You're like, it's all biodegradable, probably.
It must be. It's all come from here.
It's all come from Earth.
Surely.
I mean, using the fourth principle of Pacadonia, everything's from space anyway. So I thought, I can't freeze it. I can't throw it away. I can't just make... I think I Googled a few panko recipes. I'm not going to start cooking loads of panko stuff over the next few months. I thought I could put a lot of it in jiffy bags and send it to my enemies.
Yeah. Or if you've got guests, Meghan Markle would probably... Yeah, she'd do that, wouldn't she?
Oh, she'd do something lovely.
A little bag of panko.
She'd make a lovely little panko presentation basket for the guests that don't come to her fictional house that she doesn't actually live in. Basically, I've naturally come up with a solution.
Yeah.
Which is, every day, I just eat a teaspoonful of panko. And it's not enough panko to affect my digestive system or to affect my life, but it does mean it means I'm getting through the panko one spoonful at a time.
There is an alternative suggestion that is staring you in the face.
Yeah.
That would involve a major life change, though, in your urban setup.
Whether I declare myself for tax purposes as a turkey and stuff myself with the panko.
So that's option one.
Okay.
Option two is you're sitting right next to a washing machine full of damp clothes,
which
you could don panko yourself and become master of the pigeons.
My God! It was right under my nose the whole time!
And so the Pacadunia proverb would come true.
And Mike, of course, we thought was the second prophet of Pacadunia with that idea, but turns out he was a false prophet. And
he's the keeper of the anti-loaf.
He's the keeper of the anti-loaf. He was condemned.
The forks-tongued whisperer.
The forks-tongued whisperer that came up with the panko clothes idea. Henry was walking halfway up Oxford Street when he realised it was a crap idea. He was really, really cold. A lot of the panko was falling off. He was being followed by a policeman.
Turns out pigeons don't like wet bread anyway.
Pigeons don't like wet bread. And at that point, Mike was sentenced to death through the medium of swallowing loads of crows. Wasn't it?
For so it was written.
For so it was written. I was taught a vocal warm-up, which was to do this. Hang on.
That's it.
Hang on. And that what that does is it opens up the vowels, but it also gets your palate going with the hang on.
Okay.
It opens you up and brings you down to a... No, it's... you go from... up to down, so you go, and then you just wait for the caramel contracts to come in. It's just a waiting game at that point. Oh, that's like not that. Bad.
What about some tongue twisters?
Oh, yeah. Have you, do you know some of them, Mike? As a veteran actor, we can say that now, can't we?
Yeah.
You must know some of those.
As a beloved ham.
As one of the nation's favourite meatheads. As a stage meat crafter. Or an expert in the craft of...
Ham hocks. Hop through hula hoops. You just say that several times.
What?
That's just it's a classic tongue twister, isn't it?
Yeah. Ham hocks hop through hula hoops.
Hop through hula hoops. Obviously, so that's one of the reasons it's called ham acting, isn't it? Because it's all ham meat-based.
Ham-based training.
It's ham-based training.
It's the original training.
Gammon.
Pancetta! That's how you do it.
Polish sausage.
Horse cheek. Rump! And we're ready. the thing I was taught was this thing. There's a bit when you go down, where there's a crack as you go down one octave to the net. There's a sort of crack.
There's a break, isn't there?
There's a break. And if you can control the break...
You can be Mariah Carey.
You could be Mariah Carey. Yours.
How do you mean control the break?
In other words, make it sort of inaudible.
Oh, I see.
But because there's a moment where you go down, and it gets all crunchy as you go down an octave. If you can sort of... build musculature around that to kind of make that bit to make the join smooth. It's basically a form of sonic carpentry. That's how I see it. It's all about hiding the joins.
Because
people talk about they go from their head voice to their chest voice, I think they say.
If you're using your head voice, you're an absolute amateur. And
I've never really understood what
you'd be lucky to be doing Pirates of Penzance in an old people's home.
Yeah. How do you feel about your neck voice?
Neck voice is important.
Hello.
Yeah. So neck voice is good for playing an old perv. Hello. It's all in the neck.
Trailers, you need bowel voice, don't you?
Trailers is bowel voice, yeah.
He was a cop on the edge. It's that kind of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't do it.
But you should be singing from as low down in your body as possible. So you should be singing from your feet, from your knees, from your
well, it's related to sea level, isn't it? Rather than
in relation to sea level. Yeah. Yes, you have to compute a quick Pythagorean calculation, don't you?
Yeah.
That's why most theatres are actually on ground level, aren't they? Or
just below?
Or just below, aren't they? To make it easier,
because singers talk about their belt as well, don't they?
Do they?
I remember working with a singer on a thing, and she was saying, "I'm having terrible trouble with a cold or whatever, so I've lost my belt, but I'll be able to do it all in my head voice."
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, just go for it. She was great.
We didn't have to pussyfoot around this. It was Phantom of the Opera, and it was...
Sarah Brightman.
It was Sarah Brightman, wasn't it?
Yeah. I was playing the sewage mist.
That's right.
A lot of people think that's a kind of effect, or like a dry ice machine.
You'd been promoted from Rat 4, hadn't you?
Yeah.
You were told it was a promotion.
You didn't even need to audition for Turd 3, did you, initially, when you first got... That was an offer, and then quickly went to Rat 4.
That was an offer. It was take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Don't make me audition for Turd 3, is what I said.
I've played Turds Across the West End. I don't need to audition for it. Yeah. I've played a turd in Les Miserables.
You can do a comic turd, a tragic turd. Yeah. Turds from around the world.
Yes, you've played a turd in a box in Oedipus, didn't you? It's not actually ever used, but it's there.
It's implied.
It's implied.
I've played a turd at the Globe.
Open air turd is if you've got the Globe, isn't it? Because obviously you really need to keep an eye on the weather, don't you?
Especially as a turd, yeah. I was playing the lead in Turdulus and Cressida.
That's right. But it was open air, wasn't it? It was rain, and actually you ended up becoming a bit of a wet turd, didn't you? Certainly for any of the reviewers are to be believed.
Oh, Henry, I can't believe you read the reviews. You said you didn't. Sorry. You were saying to me, don't read the reviews. I don't.
I was trying to help you through a difficult time, Ben.
Oh, Henry.
No, but because Rat 4 gets its own dressing room then, doesn't it? Whereas
well, it's a sort of crevice you can crawl into.
It's a crevice you can crawl into, but yeah. Mist doesn't get anything, does it? Sewage mist.
Well, no, they would stuff me back into a canister at the end of the show. I was pressurized then for the next 20 hours. It was terrible.
The definition of a festival, I think we can all agree, is there has to be a van selling a whole hog.
Yeah.
Either it could be barbecued, it could be roasted. You do what you like with the hog.
Yeah.
But it's whole.
Boiled.
It can be boiled. It could be fricasseed, it could be saladed.
Okay.
The whole thing could be stuffed with lettuce. As long as the head and hooves are still on. Because if you're just selling, for example, pork chops out of a bag.
Yeah.
That isn't a festival. That might be some, but that might be, you know what I mean? I think it has to have a certain degree of scale to it.
What I quite like is, and it's become quite popular in recent years, sort of disastrous festivals that have gone wrong, like the Fyre Festival.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was good.
Because people think they can just put on a festival. They think, all I've got to do is boil a whole pig, sell it from a van.
Yeah. I've been to a festival. I've got a boiler pig.
Yeah.
Just need a location and a date.
Don't just bring pork chops in a bag. I know that. I mean, I've got pork chops in a bag anyway, but those are just for personal use. That's not connected to the festival.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's hog roast.
St. John's Ambulance.
Yes, St. John's Ambulance.
It's not for health and safety, or it's so you feel like, okay, this must be a thing.
This is a day out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a proper day out if there's St. John's Ambulance.
Well, because they're no use at all. If you actually go to them with an injury, you go into the tent and all they say is, right, well, looks like you're bleeding badly from the leg, so we'll just have to try and invoke the spirit of St. John in some way. That's all we can really do in here. We've got a framed photo of St. John. Well, it's an artist's impression of a photo of St. John. We've got a copy of the St. John's Bible. And I'm actually called James, which is quite close to John. That's one of the reasons I got the job.
The thing about St. John's Ambulance that always trips me up is it's not called St. John's Ambulance.
Oh.
Why? It's called St. John Ambulance.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's a nice little annoying, boring fact to know that I like that kind of thing, though. That's like the old... It's not actually Frankenstein's monster. It's Frankenstein and his friend the monster. Or whatever, isn't it? It's one of those things. That's a nice little fact to add to my little pedantry list.
Yeah, it's a good pedantry point.
It's good. So it's not St. John's Ambulance, it's
St. John Ambulance.
And how is it that it works? Do they access funding from businesses that pertain to the estate of St. John that are still going? Do they get a royal, like, what's the funding model?
It might be a sort of Vatican decree or something like that.
I don't know.
They're to do with the most venerable order of the hospital of St. John of Jerusalem.
Bloody hell.
So basically, it's a charity that is based on the belief that what really matters is helping people out that have got having a dizzy spell at a festival or whatever.
Yeah.
Genuinely, it started out as part of the like chivalric order stuff. So it was like knights and all that business. Yeah.
So it's kind of come down, they've sort of come down a peg or two, haven't they?
Yeah.
Because it's now very much, probably just stop drinking, lie down for a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Presumably. Although statistically, it's one of those things, that's one of the things about a festival that we have to deal with is statistically, you know, if you get 50,000 people together for an afternoon.
Someone's dying.
Someone's going to die. Five people are going to get married.
Yeah. one person's going to spend all of that time in the toilet.
Yeah. Three people are going to decide to write a novel. Yeah. One person's going to give up on a novel. There are just certain things which will statistically happen, won't they, when there are that many people together?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, someone's going to like instantly like buy a falafel and then drop it on the floor.
Having queued for 45 minutes to get that falafel.
And then they'll look expectantly at the guy being like, okay, so you could just do me another one, right?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, no way, man. Gets he's the back of the queue.
Yeah, even though he's making a really brisk trade.
Yeah.
And then you think the markup on these falafels.
Yeah.
Is there a festival tax effectively being added to falafels that are sold within a festival because essentially they've got a captive audience? We don't have true falafel competition happening. And that is what I'll be discussing at the Pyramid Stage
with Rory Stewart.
With Rory Stewart at 11 p.m. tonight. That's right. Get as high as a fucking kite because it's falafel chat.
The music festival scene has become interesting, isn't it? Because that has actually happened, isn't it? Which is that something that up until, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, was mainly about taking drugs and getting drunk and listening to music, has been infiltrated somehow by like the kind of Guardian Weekend magazine. And so you will be at a music festival and then it'll be like, Mariella Frostrup talks to Monty Don. And you're like, what's going on? How is this happening?
I've got a weird thing, which I think is probably just me. It's silly, really. But I find ideas are actually what genuinely I get high on. In a way. Well, so I actually at festivals, I will sometimes, I'll be known to actually deal, but sort of go around dealing. I'll sell ideas to teenagers for like 10 quid. I'll give you like a
like brand. You'll give the first one for free. That's the really horrible bit, isn't it?
First one's free. I'll be like, for free, I'll give you a new take on Kubrick's Clockwork Orange that I guarantee none of you or your friends have thought of. That's for free. Yeah? You want a second one? Right. Okay. Second one, £10. I've got a strong argument as to why the British croissant has recently overtaken the French croissant as a better croissant. I know it's hot information, but I think you're ready to deal with it. That kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like concepts.
Well, what length of trousers will be fashionable in 2 years' time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, give some of that. Also, for £25, does democracy work?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. But first, razor light.
Well, I'll tell you what didn't give me food poisoning.
Mm. Yeah.
A nice ham salad.
Here's some more stuff from our episode that we recorded about ham salad.
Yes, please. Is that a big Michigan thing? I've never been to Michigan before. Do they?
I think they're into cheese, aren't they, Michigan?
Are they?
It's a big cow area, I think.
Okay. Cheese and fish, I assume.
Where's the fish coming from?
Well, they're surrounded
the
by
Great
massive,
Lakes.
Massive lakes, aren't they?
Although how the fish got into the Great Lakes is a question that we could explore. Because how is it, with evolution, that all the lakes in the world have roughly the same fish in? Did they all independently evolve?
Is that true?
It doesn't sound true.
It doesn't sound true, does it? So what's going on? Are we to believe that primitive man was going around dishing out, you know,
installing trout
in different places?
What for?
And in which case, why?
I have a related question, which is, if you build a pond in your garden, before long you'll have a newt in it.
Yes, one would hope so. I assume that's the reason why most people do it, isn't it?
But where does it come from?
Well, they get about.
I'm serious though, like, you never see a newt crossing the road, or like, they're like, they only live in ponds.
They're discreet, though. They move about. They're exploratory. They go walkabout. It's all part of the... It's a badge of honour for the newts. They come to life where they just have to set out and explore. And they know they'll mostly perish, but some will find a pond.
Mike, you know that guy with the big plastic rucksack? Is it possible that it was packed full of newts and pond life? And he
might be the newt distributor.
He might be the newt distributor.
Yeah. He did ask me if I had a pond. That's the first thing he said, now that I think of it.
Have you got a pond?
No.
But he was offering to dig one in 20 minutes. That's why he
What he does is he digs you a pond in 20 minutes, and then he offers you the right to buy the pond. At that point, if you say no, it's really, really awkward and annoying.
It's old Saxon law, isn't it? That wherever you dig a pond, it's your pond, even if it's on someone else's land.
But if you then said you didn't want it, you'd have to get one of those water hoovers you hear about very, very rarely.
a wet and dry vac.
Is that a real thing?
Yeah, I recently had cause to buy a wet and dry vac. My car was leaking into itself.
Oh, no, yeah. I've been through that.
In a grim metaphor of your own life. God, it'd be nice to have a car problem one day, which isn't a metaphor of my own life. You were thinking. Yes, in a way, I suppose I am a kind of a cheesy glove box, aren't I?
I do have an old fruit pastel stuck to the side of me.
In some ways.
I am a rapidly liquefying wine gum in some ways.
I have been impounded by the Ministry of Transport. Why is that?
There's all these wine gums in my car.
Yeah.
And they've been left there for about 2 years. And they were turning back into wine.
It's a miracle.
It's between like a nice Pinot Noir and a sort of Jacob's Creek, isn't it? Like a Merlot.
Yeah.
It's a decent table wine. It's not special occasions.
Pop it in a bolognese, I would.
Pop it in a bolognese.
Be all right. Yeah. Boil it off, though.
It's one of the only wines where you can offer people, would you like red, blue, green?
Or indistinguishably murky.
This has been footwell aged.
By the way, you know how I, it's a little London thing I do. If someone offers me a wine gum, I go, yes, can I just have a little bit of it first? And yeah, go on, fill it up, and then I take the rest of the wine gum.
Yeah, so my car was leaking into itself. So he was saying, you need to get a wet vac to be able to suck all this out of the upholstery.
What I would have come back with is, if it's leaking directly back into itself, is that actually a problem?
Hmm. Can it leak back out of itself again?
Well, leaking out of itself, I'd say, is more of a problem. If it's leaking into itself, I mean, everything's leaking into itself. But was it leaking into the wrong bit of itself?
Yeah. It was making the seats wet.
You should have said. But do you have seat heating? Because then you can sort of
just burn off the petrol. with an electrical filament.
No, but if you've got warm seats, you can warm it up.
Yeah.
And then, okay, in a way, it's putting a plant. Anyway, it's putting a
vapor.
It's putting a sticking plaster. You're creating a chemical vapor there. Then you've got the open top option with the Saab. Was it in the Saab?
It was in the Saab. Yeah.
Then you got the open top. You know what? A lot of these problems you can solve not by solving them properly,
but by flipping the Saab upside down with the roof off.
Yeah,
and just draining it into the gusser.
Exactly. It's there are these old sort of. Mm. For example, have you tried putting baking soda on it?
Or yourself.
Well, not on yourself or on the car or both. But, you know, there are a lot of make-do and mend options you can use, which what they do is they kick the problem down the line until it becomes a properly fatal car incident where where you explode a large section of the M2. But what we were discussing ham salad.
Yes.
Ben, you started talking about your car.
Because you started talking about a wet and dry vac.
Oh, yeah. So there is a blue, it's a blue version of a Henry Hoover, which I thought meant it was a sort of like a sex toy one. But it's not. There's a blue Henry Hoover, which just sucks water, which is weird because it's sucking something that is clean, which is weird.
Oh, no, it sucks fluid.
Okay, it sucks fluid, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so
it's
fluid
good, it's good if
it, fluid is more often than not unclean, I would say.
Well, that's a good point. The liquid element of fluid will always be clean because the liquid element of fluid is water. But the filth, the infilthening agents will be dirt, grime, fats. Including liquefied fats. But again, within those fats, the liquid element of the fat will be water. The fat element of the fat will be amino acids.
Initially, because we were discussing whether ham salad is an indigenous or exotic dish in Michigan.
In Michigan. Then I've realized since that I was thinking of Wisconsin.
Cheese and fish. And then, Henry, you came up with a bold claim that all lakes have the same fish.
Certainly broadly true. Certainly if you're a... Actually, that would actually completely tank the Geordie fishmongers, wouldn't it? If you could just get the same fish out of any old lake, which you probably can, it would completely give the lie to the idea that transporting fish from Newcastle...
Well, what I was going to say is I don't think we really... eat that many fish from a lake, do we? We eat the ones from the sea.
Mm. Okay.
It's not very often you're eating a pike or a perch.
Or a carp.
I mean, Polish people like eating carps, don't they?
They love a carp, yeah.
But mainly we're doing seafood, all right? That's rather than lake food.
Okay.
I think
but
it's because fish...
Great Lakes, saltwater lakes.
Oh, Mike.
Oh, Mike.
Touché.
Touché, my friend.
Don't know. Might be.
I don't know.
Because ham, it's the only product in nature which is naturally that, which is both thin, stable, mm-hmm. resistant to water,
yeah.
and tasty. So it's got so much going for it, hasn't it? Because you can scroll a roll of ham, scroll mm-hmm. roll,
yeah, mm-hmm.
scroll a roll of ham. You just have to hope that the marbling of the fat spells what you need to say, which is obviously a bit of a track of the dice.
You know, with that thin ham, you know how sometimes it's a bit wet?
Yes.
And that's
I don't like wet ham.
And that's not very nice.
No. Mm.
But then sometimes you have a bit that's actually too dry.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And that's almost as bad.
The curling ham.
Yeah.
Is the sort of the fringes of an abandoned sandwich, that kind of thing.
The level of humidity you need around a bit of ham needs to be pretty perfect for me.
When it starts to curl at the sides.
Yeah.
Like an old banknote used to do, yeah. And when you hold it up and try and see King Charles's face in it, and if it's there, that ham is off.
Well, for me, the way for thin ham is the Icarus of hams, really.
Okay,
because I think we had mastered ham, and then we pushed it too far, and you got people squishing bits of ham and, you know, injecting it with water and getting ultra fine sliced machinery, and things go wrong with it. Do you know what I mean? You're messing too much with something that was perfect. And then you got wet, it's dry, it's hard to tell if it's gone off, how much goes in a sandwich to make it an effective sandwich. What's the point of a wafer? Who wants actually a wafer-thin ham? Where's it useful?
And also, you're meddling with the very building blocks of pork.
Correct.
Itself.
Yeah.
And do we dare meddle as deep as we've been meddling? We do dare, because we have meddled, as I've just said. So we have dared, but yeah. Do we?
And sometimes that means you get a drippy packet of ham.
You do get a drippy packet of ham.
And the ham fathers and the ham mothers would have wept to see that, I think.
They would have wept, and they would have, you know what they would have dried their tears on? Ham. Wouldn't they?
A handkerchief, which is obviously the origins of the word. Things, you know, language evolves, it changes.
Do you want to know what my current home salad is that I have for lunch a lot of the time?
Yeah. Yes, please.
Red cabbage.
Yeah.
Sliced thin.
Very good.
Carrots. Mm. Gone through a cheese grater.
This is sounding already very sort of like 80s kind of Bournemouth hotel style salad.
That's the vibe I'm going for.
Yeah.
It's 1984. Yeah. You're in Bournemouth. You're hoping you're on the verge of breaking into Thatcher's cabinet. Yeah, so red cabbage, carrots, mini plum tomatoes cut in half.
Yeah.
To avoid explosions on the plate.
You go plum rather than cherry, do you?
I go plum, right? They're a bit easier to control.
Mm.
And then spring onion chopped up. If I can be asked, oh, this is so much problem. If I can be bothered, pine nuts lightly toasted. They're a bugger to get into out of the toaster. little pine nuts gag.
Lovely stuff. Yeah.
You know, if you know, you know. and then for my protein, although I hate using that word in a sort of in that sense, halloumi. Three slices on the frying pan. They go on top, and then the whole thing's drizzled in my house vinaigrette. And really good.
Oh, wonderful.
That's my salad. But there's no ham involved.
With love, from Henry, the new Netflix Smash It show.
there are micro variations, like a bit of that. I can replace the halloumi with feta cheese, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or with tuna.
Pork chops.
You know that thing of saying you don't like saying the protein is, and I totally understand that. I don't
like that word protein being thrown around in restaurants and stuff.
For me, it feels really similar to when people increasingly now are saying, and don't forget to hydrate.
Yeah.
Where hydrate means drink water.
Why have we gone
you
to
the
science?
You don't need to science-ize it.
Yeah.
It's just drink water.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for that protein. And also, can you let me know where your defecation cabinet is for later? Why are we going scientific on it? What protein would you like with that? What are we? Is it the future? Are we
I know. The future. We're on a space station.
Sorry, are people saying that in restaurants?
Yes. It won't have come to Exeter yet. So every Friday I get a salad from a little salad place.
Yeah.
I have a salad out up the road from me that does that boshes out salads for people who work in the offices and they queue up for it. And it's quite a sort of trendy place. And you choose your... Everything has turned into this now. You choose your sort of bait, you know, like you go down a conveyor belt. So you choose your box, regular or large. There's no such thing as small in this world. Regular or large. So you choose a regular or large. Then you have your base things they put in the salad. So in this place, it's couscous, green leaves, slaw, pickled cabbage, potatoes. I tend to have a bit of all of that. And then it's choose your protein. Would you like some protein with that? Which protein would you like? And it's chicken, halloumi, kimchi or something, maybe?
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
Pickled cabbage.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Is it?
Oh, it's bloody delicious.
I find it turned.
A bit of kimchi. It's Korean, isn't it?
Can I have some enzymes with that, please?
Yeah. Oh, can you sprinkle some amino acids on it, please, as well?
So Keir Starmer's in the pub with his friends. I know that he does five-a-side, so maybe this was a post-five-a-side drink.
We speculated that. We speculated maybe it's a post five-a-side thing. I was telling my brother about what happened. I was like, oh, yeah, I came in. And I was quite good at spotting the security. I could tell that guy's a security guard because he didn't look like a security guard. Which, you know, but you could tell from his face that he'd seen things that, you know, that would harden the top of a creme brulee.
He'd seen The Brutalist without a piss break.
Well, that's how they train them now, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I was really worried about, I was really worried as I was walking past this guy that I didn't want to behave in a way that, because his instincts must be primed, that if I do something weird, he's going to rip my neck out. Mm. And then my brother said to me, what about those two guys that were sort of standing next to you when you were putting your line bike away? And I went, oh, no, those were just two guys. They were just like two guys.
With earpieces.
Well, no, I thought they were just two guys. They were just two guys standing there. They weren't, you know, that guy's... And he went, you idiot, that's what they wanted you to think. And I looked down, and what was sitting in my lap? My own bloody neck. They had ripped it out. Luckily, they replaced me with a government-issue neck. Which,
and they're outside doing wheelies on your line bike, laughing the evening away.
But basically, I reckon those two guys were security as well.
How were they dressed?
They were just two normal guys.
Suits?
If they were security, they were brilliant. Because the guy spotted almost, he looked too much not like a security guard. Mm. So that you looked at him and thought,
was he?
He was drawing the eye. Whereas there were just two guys who I didn't even register. And I wasn't worrying about them looking at me and what I was doing. And then my brother pointed out those probably were the security guards, or they were as well.
He'd been watching them deftly frisk you as you...
As I walked along without even knowing what was happening.
Mm. What was Starmer drinking?
Don't know. To be honest, as I arrived, he was basically saying his goodbyes and was on his way out.
You get that a lot.
I get that a lot. And then as he left, sure enough, the Black Range Rover turns up and he's whisked inside.
Wow.
He's been kidnapped.
I don't think this is where you're supposed to let people know about that.
He's been kidnapped. The only person that could have prevented that was me, who I'd seen the three suspicious people outside the pub, but nothing about it.
You're letting the authorities know via this podcast, which comes out in about a week. Yeah.
There's nobody at the helm of Britain. We are careening.
We are careering.
Into the ravine.
Careening into the abyss.
Careening?
Either. I think both at this stage.
Okay, the next one, Henry. I wonder if you can introduce this one entirely en français.
Ooh la la.
I mean, I know you're not firing an all cylinders, so maybe French is the first thing that goes.
French is the first thing that goes. what is the topic? As I'm preparing Google Translate.
Language. The topic is language. Or as I believe they say in France.
Langage.
Langue, something.
Maintenant, on va parler de la langue. Maybe. I think I've just said now we're going to talk about the tongue. Possibly. That was pretty close. Maintenant, nous allons parler de langue.
Ooh. Mm. Oui.
It just genuinely makes me angry. Like I swear and stuff at the wind. It's like, oh, it just, but also, is it really necessary? Like what function is it? Yeah, like rain has a function.
You're going to have to get used to living more wind and stronger winds.
Is that right?
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Climate change, isn't it? There's going to be more extremes. You're going to get
sorry,
more.
Mike, hang on.
Come on, the Mike. Climate change denial tank top, of course.
Read the tank top.
No such thing.
See that the little woven bit at the bottom? If you look at it properly, it says the temperature's always vacillated massively over billions of years.
The Romans used to grow grapes in York.
I'll see you in 10 years for a glass of Orkney's champagne. It's a good thing. Also, if penguins heat up enough, they'll just become bigger chickens. They'll just become water chickens.
And then our eggs will be cheaper, thank goodness.
Exactly. Also, when you think about it, the water levels can't rise, can they? Because there's only a certain amount of water on the Earth in the first place. If the water levels were to rise everywhere, it would mean the Earth would be getting bigger, which it isn't. And if it did get bigger, it's getting nearer the sun, which means it's getting warmer, so that'll boil off anyway. Yeah?
And reduce nicely and, to a fine paste. Reduce.
Exactly.
Couple of bay leaves.
couple of bay leaves.
Global passata.
A little swash of Marsala wine, or a tiny bit of balsamic, but not too much. We don't want it to be too sweet. And then three trucks worth of cloves to give it a little Christmassy. We want the earth to feel Christmassy, don't we?
Don't stop stirring, whatever you do.
And
do
not don't stop stirring. Add in a bit of flour, stir it up, and then just stick on Radio 4 and go and have a nap for 20 minutes.
But don't stop stirring.
But don't stop stirring.
How many times?
But have a nap. You'd be bad-tempered about it. I've told you can have a nap while stirring. Yeah.
But language-wise, in terms of speaking other languages, Henry, you can do French big time?
I've got decent French, yes. I'm trying to keep it up by listening to French podcasts recently. And I don't know if I'm imposing stereotypes on it, but the podcast I'm listening to is... I just Googled top 10 podcasts in France. I just thought I'm going to listen to a French podcast to try and keep my French up.
Hmm.
And the one that came up, it's just people talking about their like relationship stories or just kind of personal stories.
Yeah. Right.
And it's all just, yes, I was with this man for 3 years, but then I became bored and I started to take a lover. I took a lover for 3 years, but then he had taken another lover, which was my mum. My mum then took herself as a lover just to buy time while I was searching for an interim lover. I don't know if I'm imposing stereotypes on it, but it feels like it's
everyone's... Or is it just true that the French would make a podcast of that ilk better than the Brits?
Could be. I mean, basically everyone's just having affairs, leaving each other, having kids, then meeting someone else, then... But it's kind of, it's all described in a very matter-of-fact sort of way, which makes me think, oh, that blimmin' French. Oh... Just sort of reconfirms all my stereotypes about them.
I quite like it when stereotypes are confirmed. I know they're obviously damaging in lots of ways, but when you go to different European countries, you do kind of go, broadly speaking,
yeah,
they're not wildly off the mark, are they, these stereotypes?
That Italian man is shouting at that other Italian man.
Yeah.
I'm moving his hands a lot.
Yeah. So you can speak French to, I would say, a fluent level, it seems.
To be honest, I slightly exaggerate because it makes me seem cool, I feel. Yeah. I've got decent French. It's much better than your average Brit's French, definitely, yeah.
Well, hang on. When you're listening to this podcast, are you just imagining that they're talking about all taking lovers all the time? It's actually...
Oh, yeah, it's just sounds. It's just like, I'm just hearing French sounds and filling in the rest.
But do you feel... The thing I think is interesting about language is people who are bilingual, there are many of whom... In Wales, are bilingual.
often will say that they feel like they have a slightly different personality in the other language, or they have a kind of slightly different way of being in each language. It goes further than just how they're speaking. It kind of informs their personality in some way. Do you feel that when you speak French? Is there a French version of Henry Packer that appears?
Oh la la.
Henri.
Benjamin. Tu n'as aucune idée de... le cinéma. Quand je suis français, j'ai un pouvoir incroyable. Yeah, it has changed, doesn't it?
Mm.
Basically, I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm basically a powerful,
yeah,
sort of sensual man.
Because I remember when I went to Brazil, and I did not learn very much Portuguese at all, like a tiny amount. But even then, you can't really speak it without kind of pretending to be a Brazilian, because
yes,
there's a kind of vibe that goes along with it, and you become much more tactile suddenly, and you're kind of hugging people. And
but and again, you're using the stereotypes, aren't you? Because you were limboing a lot on that holiday, weren't you? You'd limbo into restaurants.
Well, it's the only way to pronounce a lot of the words, isn't it?
Is that you have to get your esophagus has to be sort of bent back.
You've got to throw yourself into it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has to be on the same horizontal plane as your diaphragm, otherwise you just can't get that stuff out.
You just can't say the words.
Yeah.
So I did Spanish at school.
Mm.
So we did a few trips to Spain and stuff. And so I, in terms of what you're saying, Ben, I remember that the way to master the accent was to do an impression of a Spanish person. I think that's how you first, yeah, you know, we imitate, don't we? The human is the great imitator, isn't it? It's what we do.
Like syphilis.
Is syphilis an imitator?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was it imitating?
Well, because it's got such a broad range of symptoms and presentations that it can, you know.
It's a shapeshifter.
You can mistake it for other things.
Oh, I see. So it doesn't make you do like a really passable Keir Starmer.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, that Keir Starmer was so uncanny. Had you considered going to an STD clinic? The way I tried to master the Spanish accent when I was doing Spanish was by doing an impression. So obviously your impression might be a bit stereotypical. So the hijo. Me gusta, ¿dónde está mi cabin? Me llamo Enrique Paquer.
So this is also the sort of doing the Castilian sort of lispy one as well, right? This is...
The hardest thing to get right in Spanish is there's a sound in Spanish which we don't make, which is in between V
and B.
B, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do it at all.
But no, it's really hard. But one thing I learned was, which I started doing in Spain, which I think was maybe a bit silly, but what I would do is... Because obviously when you're speaking a language you're not very good at, you spend a lot of time pausing while you're trying to think of the word.
Mm-hmm.
So what I developed was a technique which was to make a Spanish noise. Yeah.
So go, ¿dónde está mi bolso? Porque no sé dónde está...
just give me a sec, mate.
Jump in if you speak English.
And obviously in French that's...
Yeah.
It's kind of like keeping the motor running.
Yeah.
I can't think what that would be for German, Mike. You know a bit of German, don't you? Is there a kind of German noise?
Isn't it just saying gut, 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 gut over and over again?
It's it would be a difficult one to write down, I think.
Oh,
so make German the noise, pause. Mike. There's definitely a German pause noise.
Give us the noise.
But it's more, I think it'd be deeper down and there's less of it, I think. It's cleaner. It's a cleaner language, I think.
So how good's your German, Mike?
Not very good. It's the old, I can understand more than I can say. My spoken German is very, very messy indeed.
Mm.
Very, very messy.
And is there a German Mike that comes through?
Oh, yeah.
What's a German Mike?
Oh, he is magnificent.
Yeah. He's peacock of the Berlin burlesque scene.
Oh, yeah.
He's ebullient. He's spontaneous, he's reckless, dangerous.
Mm.
He's quite an extraordinary creature.
I'd like to meet that guy.
He's wonderful, but he always leaves me with little bruises everywhere. And a torn shirt.
When you wake up?
I wake up somewhere I didn't expect to be when Joe and Mike has been possessing me.
And that brings us neatly to the topic of language isolates.
What are they?
What's an isolate?
You know, like Basque and I think Korean is suggested to be one.
What does this mean? Like the languages that aren't similar to
no
other
one can
languages.
Work out how they're related to any other language.
I really?
Yeah.
But Basque?
Yeah, yeah.
And Korean?
Korean, I've read somewhere that it is, but I that blows my mind how it possibly can be. But there's lots of them. Like lots of them will be like sort of little indigenous tribes and, you know, yeah, remote locations. Sense. It sort of makes perfect sense. Basque is like, I find that hard to work out how that's happened. But
well, the only word that is universal to all languages is the word Rymans, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Which always means station of choice.
And even hitherto uncontacted tribes will
well, they'll have a Rymans.
They'll have a fully working Rymans.
Because it's the only high street shop that has developed in every culture that we know.
They might not have self-checkout. And frankly, I won't always have support that.
Yeah.
But the student discount card and the small business card, which I have, is usable in all of them.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So it's 10%. It's worth it. Also, if you're stuck in Upper River in the Amazon or whatever, if you buy enough Lever Arch files, you can make a sort of makeshift raft. but it won't float. Language changes the way we think. Can we think without language? Mm-hmm. Just letting it sit there. Try and answer my question without language. You can't, can you? Exactly, and I've made the point. Thank you. So that's why it's good to learn sometimes by doing little demonstrations like that. Because you've both learnt something there. If I'd explained it, you wouldn't have learnt it. But I showed you how it works. I think adjectives are a bit of a problem. So, so different languages have different structures, and I think those things do affect how you think, because they're all you've got to think with is language and smells. But, I mean, you can make it what I... I could have this conversation you with smell, but it would take bloody ages, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'd have to post you a bunch of, like, a series of essential oils in a row. Yeah. You get there eventually.
And if you smell them in the right order as well.
If you smell them right, well, I'd have to write the order. Lemon, ginseng, lemongrass, cumin.
You'd have to write the order using
good
language.
Point. Yeah. Well, no, I'd have to... If I was going to be true to my word, I'd have to write the order using smell as well.
Yeah. So you have to pre-send a load of essential oils.
Yeah.
One by one? In the hope
so they didn't affect each other, yeah.
Yeah.
It would cripple the post office, which is already under extreme strain. because of the whole postal scandal, of course, from last year.
Which wouldn't have happened if they'd done away with language and replaced it with smell communication.
I think it's good that we finally sensitively touched on the postal scandal. Yeah. Keeping Toby Jones in work, mind you. He doesn't care.
He's a post office scandal profiteer. Is that what you're saying?
He is, yeah. The other one was... So I think adjectives are a bit miss... I think there's a problem with adjectives. So here's one, for example. Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people sometimes call each other weird, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, people have... It's a word that's been thrown around. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people think I'm weird. Okay? Mm-hmm. Chill out. Mm-hmm. Don't get... I know you guys, you're very, very protective of me. It's cool. But it happens, right? Mm-hmm. But I think people are always just... I'm off... And that's another overused word. People go, he's a bit weird, she's a bit weird. I'm a bit weird. People are always describing other people as weird.
Mm.
And that, to me, is... that sort of shows a limitation in language, which is... Weird that then becomes an attribute that you're giving somebody. You're saying Steve is weird. But what you've done there, I think, is confused the fact that you don't understand Steve. You've turned that into a quality of Steve, which is he's weird. Whereas actually what you should be saying is, I don't understand Steve.
This isn't a problem of language, though, is it?
Okay, so tell me what it is a problem. I mean, go on. What is it, the use of language?
Well, it's more to do with, like, people's attitude to others and...
No, but I think there's a problem with people's attitude to others, but I think language facilitates that, because if you couldn't call someone weird, I think adjectives are part of the problem. If you didn't have the adjective weird, if you just had to say...
So instead of saying, like, oh, look at that weird guy, you said, oh, look at that guy pulling a face in the hope that he can keep his glasses on his face as he takes off his fleece.
Or can you just noun it? Can you just say, look at that weirdo?
Well, but also, I think that's also...
that's worse, isn't
that's,
it?
That's bad as well. Or for example, so another example, of just say, for example, you say that film is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't what language doing there is what you're converting the experience you had, which is you didn't enjoy the film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You don't understand Steve.
Mm.
You're turning those responses into qualities that you are giving to that object, which is the film is bad.
I feel like we're a hop, skip and a jump away from you talking about some negative reviews you had at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yes.
I am not lackluster. They believe my show to be lackluster. It doesn't make me lackluster.
Yeah. And also, my writing, it cannot be both weird and bad. It's one or the other. Also, can a show be two stars? You had a two-star experience.
This is from Alex. Hey, Beans. My partner and I are currently in the maternity ward in Copenhagen.
Blimey.
While she recovers from an emergency C-section. My word.
Crikey.
Naturally, for the benefit of the new breastfeeding mother, I thought Three Bean Salad would be the most appropriate entertainment for her to have on in the background at this special time.
That's true. As far as we understand.
Big mistake.
Oh, no. First dose of language for the neonate as well.
Yes. Yeah.
In one recent episode, Henry received a bollocking related to his description of the First Minister of Scotland as the Scottish Prime Minister. One of the comments for the bollockie, Henry even brought in the proper Scots Gaelic nomenclature for the First Minister, to which Henry replied with some of his own colourful Gaelic, or Gaelic, can't remember how you say that properly.
I always thought Gaelic, but I may be wrong. Someone can tell us, please.
Yeah.
Maybe we've got a Gaelic speaker in there.
The sudden laughter this brought on in her almost ruptured the very raw stitches in my wife's abdomen.
Oh, dear.
And she said through gritted teeth, I will not die because of Henry Packer. All the best, Alex.
So many people have said that, and for so many people it hasn't been true in the end.
Cities across the world.
Well, congratulations, Alex.
Congratulations. Also, I was interesting fact about me, I was born by C-section as well.
Emergency or elective, Henry?
I guess emergency. I was placenta previa. Oh,
what's that mean?
I expect so. Placenta's in the wrong bit of you, obscuring the your womb's outlet, your womb pipe, basically.
Essentially, I was already disorganised. I was stashing the placenta in the wrong bit of the womb.
Yeah. It was in the way.
Yeah, it was in the way.
Oh, gosh.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
Kate has a bollocking.
Okay, Kate.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Hi Beans, I have a bollocking to make. A few weeks ago, you discussed the first introduction of the beaver to Britain. Now, I've been bollocked for this in a separate email because I think I said something about, oh, we've got them now, have we? And we've got them in Wales, but this is a different email. But as I said it, you know when you say things and you're like, I know that's coming as an email. Anyway. Yeah. Well, she writes, well, I was very disappointed in a certain Mike Wozniak's response.
Uh-oh.
Since beavers have been happily living on the River Otter since 2014, a mere 8 miles from the provincial town of Exeter.
I had no idea.
I thought, but why is everyone saying that they're being reintroduced for the first time?
Well, let me read on.
Okay.
They appeared on the river just over 10 years ago. Brackets, rumour has it, through some guerrilla environmentalists.
Okay.
And they were allowed to stay for a 5-year trial managed by the Devon Wildlife Trust. In the end, the beavers took over the entire length of the river and its tributaries, and people flocked to see the creatures going about their day. It was certainly something that most people living within, say, a 10-mile radius of the River Otter should have known about.
Mike.
Dear. This is
Mike, I suggest you take a stroll between Otterton and Budley Salterton of an evening this summer.
Okay.
If you see a small, quiet group of people, brackets, usually one with a long camera lens, staring at the river, you might find you can see one for yourself. Kate, Exeter farmer and bird conservationist.
Golly. Okay, sorry. Bollocking accepted, Kate. Yes. I'll get out there. I'll get out there, I promise.
I would probably leave Pam at home.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe on the lead. Or, yeah, she's certainly never seen a beaver.
Yeah, you don't know how she's going to react to a beaver.
She'll be terrified.
That's how, oh, really?
Yeah. That's how she generally reacts to new stimuli, is with terror.
How is Pam around swans?
Oh, Christ. I mean, she's terrified of everything apart from swans, where she keeps trying to make friends with them because she likes a dip and she likes...
Yeah.
So she likes to try and paddle up to them and see if they want to be friends, even though they will go into attack mode.
It's incredible.
And they, you know, they'll start steaming towards her, clearly in attack mode. She's not very good at reading non-verbal cues, is our Pam, bless her.
Yeah.
Because the language of the swan is clear. So I then have to coax her out with some other fun game somewhere else and get her out before she gets a walloping. Because she's going to come out of that worse. I don't want to see her going toe-to-toe with a swan.
Because twice recently I've seen dogs in parks just going for swans. And
they do. Well, some do. A swan was murdered not long ago. Yeah.
And it is murder. It's the only animal where it's murder. Isn't it?
And it's the only kind of murder for which you can be hanged.
You can still be hanged for suspicion.
Or failure to report.
Or failure to report.
Yeah.
Or bystander.
Yeah.
If you're a bystander.
Or tasteless joke about.
Tasteless joke about.
Yeah.
All of those things.
Or not enough intensity of crying when you find out that it happened.
Correct. Yeah.
Only one box of tissues. Prepare to meet the hangman's noose, methinks.
So why was a swan murdered, Mike? And by whom? And
well, I assume a dog, or right. maybe a fox. But yes, something canine. It was, yeah, there was a nest where there was some of the remains of a clearly murdered swan for a bit.
That's pretty impressive, though, to murder a swan. Not that I'm condoning swan murder, of course.
And there was a solo swan for a while. I haven't seen the solo swan for a long time. So I don't know if it found a new mate, or if, I don't know how a swan, because they pair up and they stay paired up. I don't know if you are a single swan in midlife, how do you find, I mean, do you have to find like another bereaved swan down the river?
The truth is, you end up shagging a string of geese.
Yeah.
But you just end up shagging geese.
It doesn't, it helps in the short term, but long term,
short term
it
helps, but
not a solution.
No. I saw a swan and a dog sort of having a sort of standoff recently. Mm. And I'm amazed that a swan got, because the swan, it seems to me the swan is like the perfect weapon.
Yeah.
It's such a kind of incredible animal, the swan, because it's got these two modes, which is, one is the most beautiful, pure white. How the fuck are swans pure white? They're in a bloody lake in a muddy British park, and they're, you know, like, I can't keep a pair of pants clean for half an hour.
Should have gone for trainers. Ice white trainers would have actually worked better, as it turns out, with going through the park.
Should have gone for trainers.
Your reputation would still be intact.
they're perfectly white. They're like symbols of sort of courtly beauty from some sort of medieval like fantasy. They're like Disney. They waft around. Just and that's their one mode. So they've got like beautiful fairy tale mode, mm-hmm. and then they've got pure death, death, the black eyes of death, the yellow beak of death, with their because all their feathers kind of arch up.
Mm.
It's like they've just got death mode, and it was absolutely so. This dog buggered off, and then it was chasing geese around and just being an absolute terror, and then it would go back to like just wafting.
Mm.
If they hadn't already been invented by nature, you'd have to try and make one up. But the fact is, you'd struggle to make one up. Language.
Final emails from Tom. Hi, Beans. I, too, attended Glastonbury 86. I didn't headline like Henry, but I was only 7 years old at the time. My abiding memory of that long weekend concerns my dad's trousers.
Hmm.
He managed to get his only pair covered in human shit. and then had to borrow a pair from a much shorter and possibly thinner other dad. Ever since then, my dad has never left the house without a spare pair of trousers tucked away in constant fear that Shitgate might happen again. Love the show. All the best. Tom from Newcastle.
Thanks, Tom. That's excellent. A good, I mean, a lesson for us all. We can all profit from that.
Yeah.
From that lesson of Tom's dad. Let's be the spare trouser generation, people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never taken spare trousers because trousers, I take spare a lot of stuff around with me in my bag, spare jumpers and layers and gloves and hats and all kinds of stuff. But the one thing I don't take with me are trousers because I've always believed that you cannot lose a pair of trousers. It's not possible.
Yeah, but it's not the losing, is it?
No.
It's the smearing.
It's the smearing.
Yes, I suppose I'm often moving around with spare trousers.
Do you have spare trousers on you a lot of the time?
Well, because of gigs, I'm away for a stay a night there, here, night there. Yeah. Even if I'm on a journey that's it's a one trouser journey, there'll be a spare pair just in case I flog myself in the car or something.
I'll often go to London for the weekend, maybe 4 days, and just because I want to only take a backpack, I will pack as light as possible.
Mm.
Which means no spare trousers. And I do feel
I couldn't do that. I would have to find a way of bringing spare trousers to that, even if I was carrying them on my hands.
Because I'll always manage to dash a pint of milk across them within seconds of me getting on the train.
Yeah.
I've always had a thing about trousers, which is how often, if ever, do you need to wash trousers?
Oh, basically never.
Because legs don't sweat.
Incorrect.
Okay, and the final episode of this month was
the Renaissance.
A word that you could use to describe this podcast, that we are Renaissance men, are we not?
That's true. We're polyglots, we're polymaths.
Yeah, we record, we broadcast, we craft.
Yeah,
I placed a T hinge on a door yesterday.
A T hinge.
T hinge.
What's a T-hinge?
Yes.
What is a T-hinge?
Exactly. I now know what a T-hinge is. And I didn't know what a T-hinge is before. So I'm telling everyone about it so that they think, golly.
How many doors did you go through before you managed to do it without ruining the door?
Oh, let's not talk about that. That's just an irrelevant detail. The point is that the T-hinge ended up on the door and the door frame. And is now.
And the door opens now?
The door opens and closes.
And closes.
Yeah. Can't open again.
But not the right way around.
Not the right way around. It's, not it's all flap. The way.
It's
flap. Now, it's
cat flap.
You've turned it into a flap. It's a man flap. It's a human flap.
It's a one-way man flap.
It's a one-way man flap.
That self-locks.
That is quite impressive, Mike. Where did you have to go to Rumpkins?
I did have to go to Rumpkins, yeah. Yeah. They sorted me out.
I'm thinking as I understand the way a hinge works, it's a kind of book shape, isn't it? Because you've got the door and you've got the negative space within which the door sits, the rim of which we call the doorway.
Yeah.
So one half of the book is attached to that, the other half of the book is attached to the door. Mm-hmm. And you open the door.
And is it a door
like
anymore?
A book. And is it a door anymore? Well. But you open the door, like opening a book, and you enter a new world if it's a book, and a new space if it's a door.
So how does that differ to a T?
So a T to me suggests that the door is rotating. The door is sort of rotating like a sort of rotisserie door, but on the horizontal axis.
We enter a half cooked chicken.
Well, we enter a half cooked chicken, and then we end up back in the room we started in because we sort of
being glazed,
but now slightly glazed.
Yeah,
I'm picturing or sort of. Yeah, like a kind of a hog roast door. How is it a T shape?
Well, it's none of those things.
Okay,
it's just your standard hinge, basically.
Is that a standard hinge?
If you've got your bit on the door jamb, and the bit on the door is just very big and long.
Oh, you're
for a big outside door.
So that's medieval style
hinge.
You didn't say it was a medieval style door. That's the kind of door, or which you'd have mocked up on the front of a carvery, possibly, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
as part of a medieval look.
Or on the front of your own home, yes. If you're going for a revamp, yeah.
So are you going, if you can't buy a portcullis at Rumpkins, that's the best you can do.
So are you going for a medieval look?
Yeah, have you remodeled your home on like York Minster? Is that what you're doing?
That's the idea. We've got the boiling oil ready to go, just desperate to be attacked. All we want is to be laid under siege.
Please, someone attack us. Keeping this 3 months oil hot 24/7 is costing a lot of money.
It's very expensive.
What you need to do, Mike, is be really heretical and hope that some zealots turn up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. With a sort of religious sect element.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe really get into graven images.
I like that. Okay.
Get graven.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Fine, because I've just been thinking about the structural elements rather than the grounding sort of reasons. No. You know, we've just got arrow slits instead of windows now, that kind of thing.
No, you need to draw some fire, though. You need to bring
a mop,
some people.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because because medieval doors have the that hinge that goes all the way across, don't they? It's great. Mm. That's a key signifier from an illustrator's point of view.
Yeah, heavy duty chunky stuff. Yeah,
to draw a medieval door, if you put those weird funny hinges on the outside.
Yeah, particularly if there's a nice iron bar that you use to lock it at night time.
Oh, yeah,
right. Is this like an outdoor door? Is this like a garden gate
it's
or
a garden
a...
door? Yeah, yeah.
Have you got one of those funny? Those old-fashioned handles on it. We push the thing down, and there's a click, 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 clink, and you open it like that. You know,
yeah,
rather
but
than
if you
a
do it wrong, then a wall of spikes flies into you.
A wall of spikes flies into you.
Yeah. Exactly.
And is there a button you can press, and you can order a papal bull? Those the really good ones have that.
Won't work at the moment, though, will it?
Yeah. Won't work at the moment, though. You're right. It's the worst time to use.
We're totally rudderless as a church.
Totally rudderless. Mm. And I think the energy in this is quite clear to people that we're in an inter-pope state. We're recording this in an inter-pope state, aren't we?
That's why Henry was vomiting the other day.
So violently sick.
We all grieve in different ways.
We all grieve in different ways. So Mike, you grieve by ordering medieval doors.
Correct.
Don't you? So hang on, Mike, are you saying this is a garden door?
Yeah.
So within a wall?
Well, technically it's a bin alley door. There's a...
So romantic, isn't
it? Our next door neighbours. So we're adjoined house-wise on one side. On the other side, there's a little gap between the houses. There's a sort of bin alley.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's the bin alley door, basically.
And you like to just go there and just have some me time, don't you, the bin alley?
Just have some me time, maybe replace a hinge if it's quiet. Yeah.
Sure. And actually... if no one's looking, maybe even sabotage a hinge so you've got something to do tomorrow.
It was 3-for-1 at Rumpkins.
And he'll actually do you a hinge saboteur kit at the same time. He knows what it's about. Takes you in the back. He's got an entire parallel anti-Rumpkins shop, which is all stuff to sabotage the stuff that you're doing in Rumpkins.
Rumpkins has got everything you need, and he's completely amoral. And that's totally the Rumpkins amoral. Guarantee.
Totally amoral. Yeah, he's got a little tincture which will bugger up your varnish on anything. So that you can then go back and get some more varnish.
He's got an instant fatberg kit.
Instant fatberg. He's got shelf wobblers. Hasn't he? He's got loads. He's even got a special powder that will create a smell that you'll never be able to work out what it was, what it is. So you'll be able to just pour loads and loads of time into it and solve it. He's great, isn't he, for that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Anyway, here's some more bits from our episode about the Renaissance.
Yes, please.
We talked about nominative determinism a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. There was Dr. Orifice or Dr. Orifice.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
Who was a, what would you call that? Obstetrician? Is that what they're called?
He's an obstetrician, yeah.
Yeah. Mags has emailed, "Hi Beans, my brother once went to an emergency dentist called Dr. Dentith." Exactly what it sounds like when you try to pronounce dentist with the dentist's fingers in your mouth. Perfect. Perfecto. Thanks, Mags. That's great.
That's outstanding.
So, yes, Fiona Bruce. Get her. Definitely. I would just open up some talks with her people. Just see what comes back at you. She's very, very, she's a very, very cruel person to work with. I think we all know that, don't we? We can say that.
Just for those who don't know, Fiona Bruce is the
presenter of Antiques Roadshow,
yeah,
which is very lovely,
and yeah, a BBC journalist.
But yeah, she smashes, they say she smashes about 90% of the antiques. So you only get to see a tiny proportion because she just smashes them on site. She's got a special mallet that she takes around and she just smashes them.
Only smashes the five-figure ones, doesn't she?
Yeah.
If you're safe in six figures, you're okay. Five figures, then you're not taking that home.
I've reached the point in my life where, within the last 2 weeks, I've sat down at my laptop and Googled most expensive things that have been found on Antiques Roadshow.
Oh, that's a low point.
I really.
But now you sit, it is a low point, but also I want to know what.
Well, you know what? This really, really disappointed. I watched about five, none of them were enough. It was like £70. It was like ones from the Michael Aspel era. What I wanted was find one where it's like £2 million and someone loses their mind. I just couldn't find. I tried it five times. I couldn't find one and gave up. There are a few hundred quid, a few thousand. I wanted like a massive mega one. And I thought there would be, because that, okay, you know what? I'm going to own this, actually. You know what? I'm me and I'm living my best life, right? I think that would be about as good as it gets television-wise, was to be to watch like five big moment wins on Antiques Roadshow. Would be brilliant to watch.
Is there anything interesting there, or is it all just sort of quite good Georgian crockery?
I don't know. I don't know if it's out there. I looked at the wrong collection. I couldn't find a mega win.
Like from the Borgias, don't you? You want a sort of fake thumb that turns out has got a tiny little dagger in it with some poison at the end. That's the...
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. It's still got Colin Borgias' real thumb in it. A genuine Colin Borgias thumb. There's only five of these extant as far as we know. Antiques Roadshow is actually quite good. Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
I don't think I've seen it since I watched it with my very late grandmother, like as a small child.
Right. I know it's very much grandmother, grandfather stuff, but it is actually quite good, guys.
I think there must be a bit of a lie in the heart of the show, which is that they present it as if the experts have like complete knowledge of every object that's ever been created on Earth. So they always have something to say, but they never go, I don't know much about this.
Well, you're not keeping that in the edit, Ben, are you? For the love of... Is that what you want to watch? A bunch of people going, not sure, sorry. Yeah, not sure.
Yeah,
I watched a really great, realistic episode of Antiques Roadshow for once, and no one really knew anything about any of them because it's quite a big ask when you think about it.
He just didn't know about Victorian flip-flops, full stop. Yeah, nothing on it.
Nothing on it. That's all she knows about. No, the thing is, they do target it with the experts. But look, Ben... We've been behind the wizard's curse, and we can reveal some secrets from inside the industry, can't we?
Okay.
They'll have zhuzhed things up a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, someone's done a lot of research about this. Like, it's a tissue of lies.
I mean, also, they've gone around in the morning, looked at them, done a bit of Googling.
Yeah.
Got their story straight, and then...
Yeah.
Television is ultimately in the hands of the researcher.
Yeah. Yes.
The uncelebrated researcher.
Mm. Exactly.
This is the last one of the series, remember? I feel like we've touched on a lot of topics. We haven't really rounded them off. Fiona Bruce, I think we've done that.
Yeah.
Fiona Bruce, we've put to bed.
Yeah, we'll expect her legal team to be in contact with us within the next few days.
Yeah, that's fine. But rolling litigation, isn't it? We made a decision, didn't we, a couple of years ago with this pod, that you keep the litigation rolling.
In both directions.
Keep it rolling out. Exactly. And if you can create a kind of litigation tsunami, isn't it, where you're...
Yeah.
If you're suing enough people and they're suing you, you create a kind of tornado.
If you can tie up the courts.
That's exactly.
That's what you've got to do.
Yeah. Exactly. Flood the zone.
Flood the zone.
Thanks for listening to Extra Beans.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See you next time. Bye.
See you. Bye.